Do you find yourself swept away by the constant change and turmoil around you? Whether personal or professional, these challenges can keep us from living a life of peace and productivity. I'm Liz Hurl, a licensed clinical marriage and family therapist, and I want to show you data-driven strategies to help bring stability and peace to your life. Welcome to the Anchored in Chaos podcast.
All right, we're back.
Liz.
It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. Yeah.
It's been a minute. Yes.
Let's catch everybody up. We took a trip.
We did. And we did a recording that will be coming out. We did it in genuine effort over. I went to Virginia Beach and got to meet some amazing people.
We did. We did a Kaizen for adaptive training. Mm-hmm. We both got, that was great fun. So anyway, we did it up at the training facility, and that was great fun.
It was.
It's been a minute since we sat in these chairs.
Yes, it has. We have been busy. There's a lot going on.
It's been an adventure. It has been. But we're ready to tackle another topic.
Yes.
It's an election year, Liz.
It is an election year, and we're going to talk about the thing people tell you not to talk about.
Right.
Politics.
Politics, yeah.
Actually, but it's more about politics and how it affects our relationships and our mental health.
Absolutely.
Because it does that. And the idea that came to me when I was thinking about politics, mm-hmm. not so much about parties and belief systems, but about how it has separated us.
Yeah.
And where the idea of coming together and having constructive dialogues over different belief systems.
Absolutely.
To come to, and us to agree on something, like that was really a foundation, right? What we were made for. I think we were talking with Nancy in the gym about that this morning.
Nancy's a client of mine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She's phenomenal.
She is.
And she's
83.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she was saying, you know, that came a long way from 15 men in a room.
Yeah.
And now
Sure did.
A lot further down the road than that.
Yeah. This, you know, the funny thing is about the politics we're all wrapped up in is that in my day and age, yours too, Liz, we were always taught that politics and religion are not to be talked
about.
Taboo. They were taboo in conversations, mm-hmm. especially in public or in surroundings.
It was bad taste.
Yeah, it would be in bad taste.
Yeah, it's in bad taste. You don't do that.
But talk about flip the script. Your politics is an absolute now in almost everything that we do.
Yeah, and you almost have to have, like, you know, tattooed on your forehead.
Yeah, your politics.
Identification.
Yeah, your politics is an identifier now. Mm-hmm. And you'll have people, friends and foe, man, they're judging you on the first 25 words out of your mouth.
Correct.
And the language that you use, if they trigger, you're off the beaten path already. Mm-hmm. And it's a minefield. Mm-hmm. It's a real minefield. And it's a tragedy because it tears up families.
I was going to say families.
Yeah. I've
jobs. Yeah.
It'll torpedo your career. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really unfortunate.
Yeah. We'll even dabble a little bit in how politics has affected our humor and comedians.
Yeah.
So you can't even joke anymore.
Comedians, well, so let's back up just a little bit.
Okay.
Where does all of this social change begin? There are a growing society of people who actually believe that most of this stuff is indoctrinated through our colleges and higher education, Ivy League all the way down to your local community college, mm-hmm. but that the indoctrination from the people who are following leftist or Marxist or socialistic or communistic party lines or ways of thinking really just indoctrinate these young minds now, right? Mm-hmm. Well, ironically, college used to be a time of discovery, and now it's a time of molding, right? Really to take this just these malleable little mushy minds and turn them into what they want, an absolute travesty. Mm-hmm. This is the time you're supposed to experiment. And you're supposed to, in this experiment, you're supposed to make discoveries and help you get started on a path of not just your career, but kind of the paradigm you're going to form. What's important to you in the way that you do business and how you treat society and how your tax money, the monies that you actually raise for your country, how they're going to be divided up. Well, now, ironically, the campuses are, although deemed safe places, they're as unsafe as you could possibly be.
Right.
And you don't want to have a political view on a college campus. It is a death wish to walk in there with it.
And it's, I'm with you 100%. Mm-hmm. So on the other side of that, the individual that wants to make a statement, stand their ground, if you will, it's a really hard place to be, and it's isolating and alone. So I want to talk about the mental health component just for a second
Sure. Yeah.
Because what we want more than anything as humans is connection.
Yeah.
And acceptance.
Yeah.
And to be seen and heard and be a part of something.
Yeah.
We want that collaboration. And when you're told what you think or believe is so incredibly wrong and offensive at times, then do we quiet our voices? Well, lately, that's obviously been something that's been happening in different dynamics.
Yeah.
Or do I just go along to get along, as Dr. Peterson was saying?
Yeah.
And just so I feel I'm a part of something, but I deny myself who I am.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. And that is something I think young people are really taxed with. I'm always admired, and I will always brag about my own son. And he's, you know, pretty strong in his belief system. But I let him know that's a pretty lonely road if you're going to stand for
it.
It
very much can be, yeah.
And it shouldn't be, though. That's the whole point of bringing this to a conversation.
Well, you know, the psychologic part of it, which is your forte, not mine, but in the way that I observe people and how we interact, is that to be accepted really needs, in this day and age for young people, you almost need to be bulletproof to being canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to bring the argument, you stand your ground. And I always suggest that you have your facts. Most don't. Mm-hmm. Most go by what they hear or
social media.
Absorb through social media.
Yeah.
Most all of that is just gibberish and garbage. Mm-hmm. It just happens to be somebody's opinion, and when you ask them about it, they have no idea what they're talking about. They just heard it, mm-hmm. and now they're repeating it. That just rote regurgitation of what they think makes a political statement. It's just a way of alienating them to us, right? And I can't say that it's specifically unique to either one party, because everybody does that. I tell people, if you watch, let's say, Fox News on one station and CNN on the other station, I can turn the volume down and tell you what they're saying. The exact same. They are both pointing their fingers saying, this guy's evil, don't vote this guy's gonna ruin us. You don't need to hear that. You need to do your own research, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's tragic. Getting back to the campuses, it literally has become so unsafe that comics, humor, you can't bring to a college campus.
Right, right.
You'll be picketed. Mm-hmm. You could be violently harmed. Mm-hmm. And many have, mm-hmm. many have. And that's bizarre, because humor is our first and last defense to the way that we see the world. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you can't even have that.
Right.
And that's very strange.
Yeah. It's interesting that we go into that. I think I see that more and more. And that's encouraged mentality of being defensive, because you're purposely insulting or challenging me. So, for instance, I do this a lot with you, and I know this is in our dialogue. You and I don't always agree on different topics or beliefs or what have you. Of course, it's fine. But it's interesting in the way that I can ask you, tell me more what you're thinking there, and you can do the same to me.
Yeah.
And I don't think you're challenging me to get on a pulpit and spew out my belief system to you in a way of pulling you to my side. You're just intrigued by my belief, right? Well, I think that's where we get confused today. Now it's, you need to prove to me why you believe this way, or let me tell you why you're terrible for believing this way.
Yeah. I'm going to reference a dialogue that took part between this husband and wife who've been married for 43 years, and she's very much a Democratic activist. And he used to write for Bill Buckley, who is one of the most conservatives in American history, especially on television.
43 years of marriage.
43 years of marriage, yeah. But quite frankly, I just find it interesting, as you and I do, it's so much more interesting to have people who you don't agree with.
Right.
Some of your very best friends, now when I say friends, I mean capital F, rainy day, middle of the night, get out of bed, help you friends.
Sure.
And that's rare.
Mm-hmm.
Any of your friends are the same people who will call you on your BS, right?
Sure.
If you should happen to present something that seems erroneous or just made up, they're going to call you on it. Really? Where do you hear that? Why would you say that?
Mm-hmm.
It's to challenge you, because you know that in our discussions, we want to have the best of discussions. Mm-hmm. And if it's just this artificial, if it's this artificial pretending that, oh yeah, that's childish. That's schoolyard
yeah.
nonsense. Uh-huh. And it gets us nowhere, and we probably won't resolve anything. And it's not that you're trying to pound me with your facts. They call them fact thrusters. Oh yeah, read this. I don't do that.
Yeah.
You're not gonna win anybody over that way. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants a PowerPoint on what you said, because you and I both know that in research, for every document you say this, I can pull up a document that says something
absolutely.
Different.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So mm-hmm. it just has to be with, like in the example of your son, these people need to be strong.
It's tough.
You gotta do your research.
Yep.
And the first thing I'd say, two ears and one mouth. Listen to what people have to say. Go find out if that's true. And if you can tear their argument down respectfully and tactfully, I suggest you do. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, you don't have to attend every argument you're invited to.
Yeah,
that's a tough thing.
Yeah, because you feel drawn in. That's what people do. They draw you in. One of the things that I have learned, and it's challenging, but I want to be clear, to humble myself when I don't know. Mm. Like if someone is saying something, I really don't know the facts around
yeah.
that. And it's like, well, how do you not know? How can you not be, you know, it's like,
yeah.
I just don't know. And I'm not going to, you know, be belittled or what have you for that versus like, oh, or with someone says, oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's great. I'm glad that maybe I can enlighten you or give you some more information.
Absolutely, yeah.
But now it's just such a, that's the part that we're creating is such a battlefield. Like mm-hmm. we have to walk into ready to, you know, be able to state our opinion on whatever yeah. it is that we believe.
You know, I will say in any conversation, even ones that I feel a great deal of confidence and comfort in discussing, I am prepared to be 100% wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
true.
And you know what? I can tell you in my life, I have come upon lots of things in my life that I said I'd never this and I'd never that
oh,
and
yeah.
I'd never this. And you know what? My opinion got changed mm-hmm. almost overnight mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because something was thrown in my face. An experience, it typically comes through the experience, but empirically sometimes things that I just get to observe and go, wow, I never... And it's not like I'm walking around in a blindfold. It's just that
you haven't had it yet.
I haven't. Yeah. Until you walk a distance in somebody else's shoes, how can you claim to be an expert? Mm-hmm. It's wrong to do that.
Yeah,
it's wrong
so
to do that.
So this is kind of totally left field for a second, but when you say that, I'm a big the female that loves watching the crime shows.
Oh, yeah.
That's this lady.
Yeah, yeah.
So I watched a lot of Dateline in 2020 and all those things.
Dun, dun.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's all pretty intense. But what I do watch it from a psychological perspective. And I always think it's really, really interesting of the people that come in that they first off, it's always sometimes quite irritating on how they interview and do certain things.
Yeah.
It's kind of, okay, well, that's...
Yeah.
Anyways. But...
And these are actual. They're not theatric.
No.
They're actual. Videotaped recordings.
Videotaped recordings of journalists being professional journalists, allegedly, and, you know, asking people how it felt to have their home blown away or something or some nonsense like that. Well, you know, it was good. It was a good experience.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point I'm bringing there is, like, now I have to circle back to what my point was on how we meet people. That was really what I was going into. And I kind of lost my train of thought because I got into my Dateline.
That's okay. But you were talking about these interviews when people walked into the interview in the interview process. What was it? Something in a discovery that you were going to talk about?
Oh yes, there it is. Thank you.
There it
I
is.
Found
yeah.
it. Mm-hmm. Found it. And that is the lack of judgment when I hear horrendous stories, because some of them are quite awful, and I'm like, I don't know all the information. Now this news, you know, station or journalist is bringing in their information and law enforcement information and things of that nature. But I don't know. I mean, when I hear horrible stories, I'm like, that's terrible. That's tragic.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the judgment, that the immediate judgment that people have. And I'm just utilizing that as a point, much less in politics. If you bring up something, you're immediately judged.
Yeah.
Versus like, maybe, just maybe have a little bit more insight that you don't know exactly what's going on here.
Yeah.
Or you don't have the full picture.
Yeah.
What you were saying earlier, I try my best not to use absolutes because the moment you use one will be a moment that
absolutely.
You know you're going to have
to. Yeah, that thing will smack you right in the side of the head. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm always like, yeah, don't do that. Never say never because it's a thing that'll come back at you. But I do think the same thing is that when I watch these things, I don't have all the facts. And who am I to judge?
You know?
And now I hear some very unique belief systems on, from a political standpoint of individual rights of, I'll just put a broad spectrum out there. I'm not going to narrow it down because this isn't about that. And I'm always like, well, that is really, I'm not sure where someone even comes up with that, you know, because I think about a lot of other factors, but to each their own at the end of the day, if you're going to, for instance, like I think that
give me an example.
That this individual was in a relationship with an airplane and that it was just like their belief system that this was, you know, their supportive partner. And it was an airplane.
This person finds comfort with an airplane, not in an airplane. Well, I guess in an airplane, but this person had a psychological affinity towards an airplane.
Right. And a lot of individuals, to each their own, they can all do that. But I also think that this is where we, you know, we tiptoe around mental health concerns of what is a healthy dynamic. And then it's like, but then there's the politics, right? Well, who are you to deem what is healthy and what is not healthy?
Yeah, you don't think that that is politics, but it is politics.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
yes,
and
it
is. That actually is a bizarre example, but that is an absolutely good example of the fact that those that want to stand on the political pulpit and say, well, you know what? He has his right to be loved by an airplane. And that airplane probably loves him back. Okay. Where did, to coin a phrase from Dr. Gad said, where would it become okay to murder truth? Right? Where did it become okay to just push common sense aside and go, okay, well, you know, now we need a law for that. Create a law. You need to be able to marry an airplane when you are in love with an airplane.
Sure.
Mm, okay.
Well, and I think that the idea of what we're doing to an individual's mental health.
I see where you're going with this.
Right. And that's, it's really problematic that, well, it's just so broad. And so now we should support in different aspects, in different parties, whatever it is that I want to do or be or whatever it is in life. There's just an automatic expectation that you support me in it, no matter what it is, even if it's harmful to
me. Yeah, that's right. Don't you love me?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's very hard for me as an individual, but definitely as a therapist to be able to say, we have not only neurological factors here, but we have, in which people don't like this part, but you know, the behavioral science that has been proven on how we respond in relationships. And of course, that's grown in our awareness and intelligence in that. But when we bring in facts like that, that's what really lights people up. Well, then there's that defensiveness. And I think that's actually more trauma response than when people get into that state of defiance of, no, don't take this away from me because this is the one thing that loves me.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite sad.
Yeah. Oh, no. I don't. Now, here's kind of where I thought you were leading me with that story, and I think I'm right, too. But when we're so quick to just affirm a person's desire, they may justify this, well, this makes me calm, and this gives me peace, and I can do my work, and I get it. I get it. But when we're so quick to affirm a person's, I don't even know what to call it, and not be politically incorrect.
No, I think you were affirming an emotional experience at that time. So this feels good. So affirm it for me right now.
Yeah. Well,
I don't have.
Then make sure that it happens. So that this guy has what he needs. In the workspace, in the social environment, as a for instance, I remember hearing stories about a man who used to ride the bus in Hawaii, and he used to bring his trash on the bus. Now, everybody thought, that's really odd. He had what we called true. It was trash. And he would tell you, it's not my stuff. I collect it. But I will only go on the bus with a bag of trash. This became his identity, right? And while you could argue this is maybe a public safety, maybe a health issue, there's a lot of reasons, but do I need a law that says you can't bring your trash on the, I don't know, now you can't have trash in your pocket, you can't have trash in your backpack, see, we're always treading on some kind of slippery slope when we do these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But I do understand what you mean, is if we're so quick to say, look, this guy needs this, he needs this, mm-hmm. and then somehow we rally the support, yeah, man, that guy loves his trash, we should all love trash. Love trash, love trash. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, and I'm not making fun. I'm not making fun, especially of people who have some mental or emotional capacity towards the real need to be fulfilled that way. Mm-hmm. But I am saying, in society, is it easier for me to change everything for you, or let's see if we can't figure out what's going on with you?
So that is, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's where I was going.
Yeah.
Where we are in a culture of just continuous validation and affirmation versus, hold on, is this even, and of course it goes into who wants to deem what is healthy and unhealthy, but where did we lose sight of wanting to ensure that individuals were healthy,
right.
minded,
yeah.
of saying, is this good for you?
Yeah.
Versus like, oh, if this is the way you want to be, then here's all the resources for that. Say, for instance, this individual that has a relationship with the airplane, we're going to make all the conditions for your workplace to be able to be in that airplane, mm-hmm. because that's what makes you feel most comfortable. And there's all kinds of social isolation and you know, a lot of other things that go into play with that. And of course, I've toyed around, and I'm not trying to dance too much off track here, but with AI, where we're leaning more into AI of having intimate partners through technology,
oh, yeah.
where there's a social isolation
yeah.
piece there.
Yeah.
Maybe the belief is that people should always receive what they think they want, no matter what.
Yeah. To just to go with the flow. It's much easier to give the guy what he needs than to. This is, wow, this is old, right? And this is deep, because this is fussy baby, right? This is, were you the mother that would, you walk into a supermarket and you have five kids and one of them's just a screaming banshee. Mm-hmm. You'll have one of these mothers who will quite firmly discipline the child or remove the child or do whatever, and you'll have everybody scowling. What a harsh mother. Mm-hmm. And yet I'll have another mother come in and she has five screaming banshees and she lets them run everywhere. Mm-hmm. And if I were to say something like, wow, I wish she'd do something with her children, how dare you? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? There are about 15 different sides to this stupid coin. And it's a minefield.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
A minefield.
Absolutely. And, you know, how we bring awareness, the purpose of even having this conversation today, is what do we do as individuals to say, what am I purposely engaging in here? What am I participating in? And what does it mean not to? Like, that's the biggest thing. I think everybody is overly involved in one another's lives, which I think is kind of strange coming from a therapist. But what I mean by that is at a levels of control mm-hmm. from social media factors of the other day, I was appalled. I was like, how on earth? And I had a long conversation with her afterwards. But my daughter was saying, I have 600 people on Snapchat. I said, I don't know 600 people. I'm like, how? And I'm just obviously not very familiar because I don't engage in that. But we're just so overly involved in one another's mm-hmm. lives in the wrong ways. And of course, this is just my personal opinion. Because we're almost like looking for something out of control and manipulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where's our invested interest in wellness and goodness and compassion?
That's the element that they sorely miss. But it's engineered that way. It's engineered that the more people you have that like you must be people really like me. I don't know. I know that when Facebook first came out, you know, I had, I don't know, 300 or 400 people. Look, I talked to 12 people. Really? So I literally just started dropping things off. Now what happens? Now I get contact. I haven't talked to these people in like 5 years, and I'll get a thing. Hey, man, why don't you like me? You know, why did you unfriend me? Why did you unfriend? Oh, my gosh, I don't know. Who are you, first of all? Mm-hmm. And even when we were friends, we weren't friends. And even when we did know each other, we didn't know each other. So why would I carry on this charade here? Well, that then you know, it reflects on me. I'm this cold-hearted bastard. Mm-hmm. That, no, I'm not. This is supposed to be a mutually entertaining thing, not score keeping.
Well, it swings right back to when we're talking about this to individuals that are listening. When the moment an individual starts making decisions in their life, I don't want to be as harsh. The word that came to mind was cuts in their life, like, you know, boundaries of saying, I don't really think this benefits me, and withdrawing in certain aspects,
yeah.
You will almost immediately get a response for that.
Yeah.
Because it's saying, what are you doing? What are you changing?
Yeah.
You're doing something.
You mean the way it's set up?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are you
sure you want to do that?
Right. And people are engaging you saying, you're being different. What's going on?
Yeah.
And it's like, actually, I've just decided to kind of do my own thing. Oh, well, that's not allowed. Like, yeah. You can't do your own thing.
Why? Why can't I come?
We are a collective. We're the Borg.
Yeah.
I had to. I couldn't help myself. But I mean, literally, you can't be an individual.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes right back to when we talk about politics as being an individual, that if you can sit down and just share, and I know individuals there, I would not engage in an open conversation with them because their passion turns outright into rage.
Yeah.
Because if I am not validating in some way their thought to something and giving them the feedback that they're desiring, they're getting more amped up and they're like,
oh, yeah,
you're not following suit here.
Yeah,
you're not acknowledging the way I want.
Your attempt to just provide some factual, or even if you are not factual, even if you have an intellectual naivety to this, they're offended by that. Why don't you know about this?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Right. Absolutely.
I didn't know Fruit Loops were. I didn't know hubcaps. I didn't know. Right. Uh-huh. How could you? Mm-hmm. But these people are passionate about. Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. It's a double-edged sword, and to navigate that correctly is a political minefield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, what you're saying, we really don't have to play the game.
You don't have to attend every argument.
Right.
Yeah, you don't have to.
It's
and if you are invited, you better know who your opponent is. You mentioned, I've had those too. I have people in my family, in my close circles, that, boy, you better not have any opposition to what they're about to lay down, because you're gonna cause raised voices, and you're gonna cause a lot of hurt butts, because people just do not, they are so embedded in the ideas and the thoughts that they have. This political / emotional castle that they built around themselves. Every single brick means something to them. And if you were to even slightly point out, hey, there's a crack in that brick, they're all over you, right?
Yeah,
So
I'm dropping a bomb.
Yeah, so I just think that, man, you don't have to. You don't have to. And if they bring that up, this is, we'll talk about this a little bit, but this is the point I to make. You don't have to.
Right. Well, and to kind of touch on comedians and one point of Dr. Peterson for a second, and that is, I do enjoy people that are willing to meet the challenge. And what I mean by that is I don't want to sound like I'm talking out both sides of my mouth. You do not have to show up or, you know, engage everyone. But you have the ability to state what you want to state, and people not like it.
Yeah.
And that I was watching Ricky Gervais. I love you. I love Ricky. And he just goes right at it.
Yeah.
Right? And actually, that's part of the humor of it for me, is that he just, and no one is safe, which is beautiful, which is exactly.
That's right.
The way we are, by the way. And what I mean by safe is just, it's all fun and games, and like, you need to calm down. It's a joke. And now I'll probably get in trouble for just saying that, but it is true.
Yeah.
And on the other side of that, when recently, I think it was a recent interview that we were both watching with Dr. Peterson and his daughter, and he had made a
comment
about
a social group,
right?
And he said, well, it's no wonder they divorce so much.
Right. And she was like, you're going to get in so much trouble.
That's going to make a reel. Yeah. And he goes, well, it's true.
But so those individuals that are willing to stand out and really be crucified for it, and they're exactly what it takes, though, right?
You're bringing up, you know, it's interesting. It is interesting because you bring up Peterson, who by his own admission is not on a political, he's not a political stump. He's not stumping for anybody. Uh-huh. He just lays it out. Does it sound like he's more conservative? Absolutely. Does it sound like he, but I can tell you that he's one of those men who has, he's very liberal thinking and he's very forward in the way that he thinks for social programs and for the betterment that politics, it's a little too hard, a little too rigid that they don't take care of certain things. I understand that. That's, we'll get into definitions here too, but I also want to point out too, Candace Owens, somebody she has this meteoric rise to fame. She's a young black woman.
I like
her. A mother. Yeah, she's quite good. Mm-hmm. Sometimes she goes a little bit off the beaten path and mm-hmm. she beats the war drum a little too loud. Mm-hmm. But who doesn't? And in this one particular event, these women say, you know, you've triggered me this, you've triggered me that. And she goes, life's hard, get a helmet. Mm-hmm. And she moves on. Mm-hmm. And the whole crowd's, ooh, ah. She's not there to score points. Mm-hmm. She's there mm-hmm. to simply saying, life is hard.
Right.
It's hard. Mm-hmm. Toughen up. Yeah. Get some tougher skin. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, how do you do that compassionately? Well, one thing is don't do it in front of a crowd. This is my whole Dr. Phil thing about if you're really trying to help people, don't try to get the crowd to clap about, oh, yeah, well, I think you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yay, Dr. Phil. Well, how do you think that guy feels then?
Right, absolutely.
You've just made an enemy.
Now you are triggering me.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know how I feel about Dr. Phil.
I know.
But yes, so anyways, okay, what's some information?
Okay, so I mean, I wrote down the information because I don't want to get it wrong, but I stumbled upon, actually.
I have to interrupt you for a second because he always says he's right, just for the record.
Who like, says I'm right?
You. You always say I'm rarely wrong.
Shut up.
It's true. It's true. Forget that?
Anyway.
I'm telling on you now.
I wrote down the information because
this
I want to
right. Go on.
I give these people the right credit. It's a Dr. Janine Safer. She's a PhD and a psychotherapist, author of I Love You, But I Hate Your Politics. She's been married for 43 years to a... Well, let's say a very conservative person, or let's say he has an R on his voting ballot. His name is Richard Brookhiser. If you don't know the name, he's very famous. He's been on television lots of times. He's a political journalist and writer, but he came up with William Buckley, and people of my age, I remember William Buckley on the television, and he used to be able to just have these really great programs. Now, today and age, you'd think he's the Antichrist, right? But he brings up these topics to me that seem, oh, it's complete, makes complete sense to me. But to the other, he would be literally the devil, and that everything he says, that's wrong. That's not how people think. Where's your compassion? Where's the emotion? You know, how do we emote people to do what's right when you're such a hard, cold-hearted bastard, right?
Wow, okay.
But the interesting thing is in the book that she wrote, that I Love You, But I Hate Your Politics, she gives you some tools. She's interviewed by the creator of the podcast called Second Act Television. Her name is Silke Endicops. I think I'm saying that correct. She created the podcast called Second Act TV. But she coins the phrase that this is kind of rare to have people who are so polar opposites in their political views, right?
Right.
And she's the one who uses the term mixed family. Right now, that would be, in today's day and age, we're thinking this is a race thing, right? But in hers, she's applying it towards their political affinities, right? But she brings forward a bunch of things that are interesting that she reminds us that you don't have to be engaged in political banter if it looks like it's just not going to go the right way. Mm-hmm. Know who you're having the argument with. Argument, discussion, but discussions can turn into arguments.
Absolutely.
Can you police that? And when you and I speak about this frequently, and that in a conversation with people, you need to have the knowledge that everybody sitting at this table in this discussion is there to discover truth through fairness, right? And we're not going to murder logic. We're not going to murder the truth. We're going to take it all in, and we're going to respect what's being said and who's saying it, and we're going to respect that person. But if you don't think you can police it that way, or if there's one or two parties, they're just not emotionally, they're not emotionally mature enough, or they're too raw for some reason, and they're throwing hand grenades, you're never going to have a discussion.
Right. Well, and you're asking for a very mature, objective encounter.
Yeah.
Of individuals that want to come together and know that there's going to be a lot of information delivered here that I may be aware of and that I may disagree on, but I might also learn something. That would be ideally.
Right.
However, I think that what we find is people walking in, especially ready for the debate, I know what this person's going to say, so I'm going to debate them with my belief and my opinion of XYZ.
Sure.
Versus like, can I objectively listen openly to what you have to say?
But even in that, remember too that sarcasm and insult are usually the signs of a person who's losing in a conversation. You know, and I've seen it before. I've seen people doing really, really well in a conversation. And then they throw in just this little barb. There would be this individual barb to somebody almost on a personal level. Mm-hmm. And that is to what? Garner a little bit of leverage? I don't know. But if your idea is to knock somebody off balance so that you can win the conversation, I don't think that's genuine.
So I'm going to jump in. Just it just popped into my mind when you were saying that. And I think it's obviously our listeners and viewers know by now we're pretty avid Dr. Peterson fans. And that is, you and I both have discussed this forum that he was a part of. And this man just verbally attacked Dr. Peterson, which is fine. He's very used to it. It's not fine, but it's interesting how he attacked, though, that he went after basically his misogyny and then that a white man, that he brought in race.
Oh, and you're talking about the Monk debates when he's on stage and his opponent.
Yes. And it's interesting, but
horrible,
because it was really horrible. But I, of course, admire Dr. Peterson. His composure and everything just didn't waver. And he's like, it's interesting that you would bring race into this. Like, what is that? Like, they're just throwing things out at this point, right?
Yeah.
And that, I think, does speak to an individual's, and I'm not just going after this example, but when people go to throwing out belittlement and verbal attacks, I do think it speaks to your level of intellect of engaging, like you're overly emotionally activated, that's what you have. You're going to go after the enraged white man or whatever. Yeah. I just think that was interesting because that had nothing to do with what was being discussed.
Well, if I may. So I'm very familiar with that. So it's the Monk debates. It's held in Canada. If you've never seen the Monk debates, they're wonderful discussions. They're open forum. They take a poll with the crowd. They actually pose a question and they take a poll of the crowd. And then after the debates, they poll the crowd again and see if they swayed anybody. Who would weigh? It's quite done.
That's neat.
It's quite done. It's like a debate. It's done quite well. In this, the topic is, when can the left go too far? That was the topic. It was Stephen Fry and Dr. Jordan Peterson, and they were up against, I choose to forget their names because they're not exactly stellar people intellectually in my behalf. Sorry to interject that. But what I took great offense to was the simple fact that while Jordan Peterson goes on and lays out this entire arsenal of argument, and it's all done quite well, Stephen Fry comes in and he brings this beautiful, emotional, quite amazing argument on the intellectual and emotion and the beauty of what we should have as rights. It's then thrown into his face, Dr. Peterson's face, that why are you such an angry white man? Mm-hmm. And he says that to his face, and the crowd goes crazy. And because it's like this game of one-upsmanship, what I find absolutely detestable. But in that, Jordan Peterson, his whole demeanor changes. Yeah. His whole demeanor changes.
Yes, I recall.
And his reply literally is that I find it really sad that we've come here, all these people have come here for this, and all the question was when the left goes too far, and yet you drug in my race. And it really seems to be a testimony to where we're willing to go to win an argument.
Right.
And it was quite, it wounded him. You could see that he was quite wounded, and who wouldn't be? So I say that in defense of Dr. Peterson, but very much to the disapproval and the condemnation of people who, that's your only way to win an argument is to slip a knife in somebody's back about some political stab.
It's not true.
And it's
not relevant.
It's not relevant.
That's what it is.
It's not relevant. But you did that on a personal means.
Sure.
And I'm not sure why, but maybe it's there. He wants to see him get triggered and go off and be the angry white man he thinks he is. I don't know.
Right. Whatever that
didn't work. You know,
button was.
Didn't work.
It did not. And that is, you know, I didn't mean to go off a little bit, but
okay.
I think it's really correlating to what you're saying.
It's important, yeah.
That if when people are engaging one another, when all of these personal attacks are on us of who we are and what we are, whether it be race, religion, your apparel, whatever it is, gender, whatever, that you're just personally attacking me. You veered off from what we're actually talking about.
Right, right.
Because why? Why are you not talking about what we actually came to talk about?
Yes.
Because you are now uncomfortable that maybe you don't have a platform to stand on any longer or you don't have any more, you know, information to offer that's really valid.
Yeah.
So let me deter everyone to this, and then
that's the point. I guess I'm trying to allude to. Maybe I didn't do a very good job at that. But if we're trying to sway the crowd and get the oohs and the ahs, and you
just did it.
And then you just did it. And then while one brings nothing but facts and they're boring, but I can ooh your mama, so, and the whole crowd ooh.
Now I'm going to talk about the oohs and the ahs there. I've shared this with you. If I spoke just clinical perspective in session with my clients, they would not.
They'd nod off.
They'd be like, this is not great.
Yeah.
The relatability is imperative.
Has to be.
Dr. Peterson's ability to articulate is profound. And reading his books, I have to read several times because the depth of them is so intense. Sometimes I have to kind of wrap my mind around it.
Yes.
And I think the absorption, and I am very much so drawn into his conversations when he speaks. One of the things that speaks to me, I guess I would say, is that the ability to bring in his information and conceptualize it from my perspective.
Yeah.
And I don't know if everyone has that same ability, because sometimes it's like, I don't know, I'm lost. There are certain people that are talking and
excuse me. Yes, yes, yes.
I'm like, they lost me. That I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah.
In all, my point in bringing all that up is I think that sometimes when that does happen, the quick, I'm not really sure what to respond here, so let me make this jab or dig or whatever, and then sway the audience to my side by my, you know.
So let's turn that into a teaching moment. So when I first came upon Dr. Jordan Peterson, we're not going to make this the Jordan Peterson hour, but
I know you're kind of
we're both huge fans, and the reason we are is because of his not only very much approach, but very much the message that he's delivering, if you'll listen, but maybe ciphering through the language that he uses. Mm. So the one thing I always want to point out is that you and I decided that we're going to practice something for 10 minutes a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that, it takes practice. So I'm used to hearing people speak at a very professional level, and they'll use medical terminology, and I used to have one that used to bother me to death, and that was not to contribute or exacerbate an already central integrative system. That used to bother me to death. That literally means don't hurt someone. But this guy kept saying it over, and I'm like, why do you talk like that? Well, Dr. Peterson has a vocabulary that's
vast,
like Shakespeare, right?
Yes.
It's up there. But quite frankly, you could go to Dr. Peterson and say, you know, Dr. Peterson, if you could you keep it fourth grade for me? Mm-hmm. Just keep it simple for me. Mm-hmm. He would. He absolutely would. He's speaking to you in a level that's comfortable for him. Mm-hmm. But if you ask him to, he'll dial it down.
Sure.
And that's a thing that can happen with politics. So when we go through the thing, you know, I didn't know anything about that. Tell me more about it. And you may find that they have a great deal of knowledge about it. Well, go do your homework. Mm-hmm. Is he right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I like to point out the most recent polarizing event that seems to happen is the Israeli-Palestinian, the Gaza-Israel conflict since October 7th. Now, so many people have formed these opinions from, I'm not sure where, but I want people to do their real research how this began and where you're getting your information from. I'm not going to take sides. I'm not going to say what, but I'll bet you'd be surprised that every single one of the decisions that are made by both parties are emotional at this point because people got hurt and you're going to defend the people you love. And now every time somebody else gets hurt, well, I've just fostered a new generation of hatred. And that's how that's been going on for 2,000 years, is it's this generation of hatred. Mm-hmm. Who's right? I don't know. Nobody's right anymore. People just keep dying. But how do you find that conflict? I want you to do some real research, some historical research. But know that whether you're Palestinian or whether you're Israeli, this is a political powerhouse. This is a society that lives with a border wall and everybody wants to kill each other. How do you think they got into that situation, and how can they possibly get out of it knowing that their thoughts have never changed? How do you solve a problem when there's no thought other than I want to kill you and you want to kill me? Mm-hmm. I know that that's not true. There are fine Palestinian people. There are fine Israeli people. There are also people who would, on everywhere in the world, that would love to strike a match to the world and just watch it burn because it's fun, or they're warped, right? And that's just a huge example of the political tensions that exist. And man, it can destroy families that they have nothing to do with those conflicts. But if you're not this, if you can't entertain or understand why I'm so passionate about this, then you're broken. Well, you know, this is hard. This is hard. So these are these teaching moments where we get a chance to go, wait a second, let's remove ourselves from the problem, and let's just look at the situation first of all. We have two warring factions. One says this faction wants to live in peace if we can. The other one, no matter what we do, all we want to do is exterminate the other. Now, when people get injured, well, now we're both trying to exterminate each other. And how possibly can you solve a problem when the thinking is nothing more than, I can't afford to be weak here. I have to be as strong as I can. And for that to happen, I got to pound you into the ground. Where's the politics like that is off the chart. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be that extreme. Doesn't have to be that severe. Doesn't have to be that complicated. But man, don't get involved. If you don't know, don't speak.
Well,
if it's too much, get away.
I challenge only the fact that if you don't know, you need to learn.
Sure.
But that, yet again, is exactly what we're talking about.
Sure.
Where are you getting your information from?
Sure.
And what is the truth? I was sharing that with you, a Cat Williams special.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that he kept talking about, he's like, there's the truth and then there's a lie. And I was like, there's nothing more black and white than that, that there's the truth and there's a lie. Well, good luck sometimes defining those. Because where you find your information from.
Yeah.
And so it is all quite a challenge.
Yeah.
What I want to definitely drive home is the idea that how this fractures our mental health in a way of division and emotional dysregulation on how we engage with one another, our family, our friends, our jobs. And that it impairs us in such a way that we'll just cease communication altogether.
Yeah.
And we eliminate the possibility of growth by that.
Yeah.
Just because what's the use? I'm not going to get him to my side, or it's going to be too difficult, or whatever it is, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
And that's really quite unfortunate. If we could open up our minds to the fact that the biggest factor in all of this is humbling ourselves. And in politics is other people want to say that are not as very ego-driven.
Yeah,
and I want to prove my point and do all the things that I know the way I want them to be done in my way and whatever. Mentality is the way I'm thinking that. And yeah, so I just think that we have to cautiously look at this and
you do.
Examine what you're doing.
These are the things where I like to point out we're navigating a bad neighborhood, all right? And I remember fondly hearing, you know, these stories of, I remember being in neighborhoods where I used to walk down the street and I could hear people in their cars locking their cars. Okay. I don't have to say if it's a black man or a white man or a Hispanic man. I don't have to tell anybody. If I don't know you and it looks like a pretty bad deal, I'm going to advise everybody lock your door. Is that wrong? But if somebody sees that, they go, oh, well, that's because that guy doesn't like that guy. It's because of his color. It's because of the neighborhood he's in. It's because of, yeah, it's all those things, I guess. But whether I can see your color or not, it's your silhouette. I don't know where I am. I don't. Mm-hmm. We should have the ability to reason that this is a bad situation. Well, don't get into one of those things politically. And if you're out yelling racial epithets on a street corner in New York, you're going to run up against somebody who ain't going to take that. Mm-hmm. He ain't going to take that. Sure. And the politics aside, it's just, we're going to resolve this with our hands. And that's where people get wrong. Right. So the end story, and not to make it too grim, but this has to do too with in defense of yourself and others. Mm-hmm. When people say things that offend you or they have offended people that you know, it's still your right. And I'd say your obligation to defend those people for having the right that they have, mm-hmm. whether you agree or not. And this comes from this, is that there is a patriotic vein that I have in my family. It runs through me as well. And that is, my job is to protect your rights. I'll handle me, but my job is to make sure that your rights are being taken care of. That's my obligation, is that I make sure your rights aren't being trampled on. And I need to go and put my arm out and say, hold on, and separate it and protect your rights. Well, he has the right to, no, we're not going to talk rights. First of all, we're going to boil it down to basics. Nobody should be throwing hands. Nobody should be throwing insults. Nobody, stop. Mm-hmm. If I can't mediate that, I just need to be able to say, look, you have a ton of freedoms. I would say you have an infinite amount of freedoms and never trample somebody's rights. Mm-hmm. But my obligation is to protect your right to say whatever you want to say to me. Mm-hmm. You have the right to say that, but know too well that I have the right to say something back.
Turnabout's fair play.
Right? And mm-hmm. you don't like what I have to say? I don't like what you have to say.
Sure.
So, again, it's one of those things when we come to the party, are we all willing to accept the truth and have maybe a passionate engagement? We certainly see when we watch the House of Representatives and the floor of the Senate, they say some horrible things about each other or the way that they act. But that decorum still has to be that, you know what, at the end of the day, we have a passionate discussion and it may not be to our liking and we may lose, but at the end of the day, he goes, you made a good argument.
Mm-hmm. But I do think that lost a little bit.
I've lost friends.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say society-wise of the ability to articulate appropriately without undercutting, even in professional dynamics. Yeah. It's always a little surprising that some people are so bold in an unprofessional manner to say certain things. And it's like, well, that's really quite unfortunate because we've just lost our professionalism in many different ways. But
we're not skilled in tact. We're not.
We used to be.
We used to be.
We used to be. But
Manners are gone.
Yeah.
It's we got to win.
So here's Dr. Caldwell's being such a cheerleader.
Sorry.
Manners don't have to be gone. Our compassion and our humility can absolutely remain in place. And that's kind of in bringing this to full circle.
Yeah.
The point of all of this is to talk about how much we participate, how much we don't participate. How do we safeguard ourselves, and to know that you know, I understand that you could be saying, that's easy for you to say, Liz and Dr. Caldwell, but people really like to push my buttons. Sure, I'm sure they do. People like to push people's buttons. Don't let them. I mean, and that seems pretty black and white too.
But you know what I would say to you know what I would say to a person who says, man, everybody is just pushing my buttons. What do you have in common with all of the people who are pushing your buttons? It's you. And I, you know, this is the accountability and responsibility thing, that it's a bitter pill. But, you know, it's the hardest thing, whether you do it scientifically or through research or whatever, you need to take a look at yourself too, right? Why are you so, take it easy here. Mm-hmm. I know one of the best ways to fire up a conversation is, hey, calm down.
Oh, that is
a really good way to get your hair pulled out of your head or your eyes poked out.
In the history of ever, that's always a good
idea.
Yeah,
but the thing I want to make out of that is, look, this isn't a party for you.
Right.
Right? If you choose to, you can, but you need to. But the first thing I would say is my father taught me that you could call anybody anything if you use the right kind of tact, right? If you use the right kind of language and you say, I'm not sure how you're going to take this, but let me tell you what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. And then what do you think about that? You see, if you're starting a rapport and you're trying to keep a rapport and you're trying to keep it right in that mid zone where we're handling good language and we're
sure.
That's a great tool, but
we've
lost the tools.
That
right?
tool is just almost non-existent because we live in a state of righteous mentality.
Yeah.
And so I'm right, and let me prove to you how right I am. So again, I'm not trying to, you know, drag home the negative slash.
Yeah, yeah. And me too.
And
me
that
too.
I really do want to encourage taking care of ourselves and realizing how beneficial is this to me? I mean, I really always, you know, I talk to a lot of people like, you know, does this matter 2 days from now, 3 years from now, 5 years, what, all that. And it is something to evaluate when you're in a circumstance and you're really getting amped up and really drawn in. It's like, wait, where are those little, you can create these in, just so you know, in a cognitive relay here. And that is that pop up and say, wait a minute. How beneficial is this to me right now? Like, and what is this doing for me that is well, that is good, that is, yeah, that is something that
it's
I need.
Positive.
Yeah.
It's positive. Yeah.
You know, it's just not, and there is nothing worse that an individual like this would detest more. And that is somebody that pulls back. And that is where we falter because we just stay in the fight of ridiculousness instead of just saying, you know, I'm out.
A couple things.
Couple things.
They're old as the hills. Don't wrestle with pigs because they love to wrestle in the mud. They love that. And you know, if you're going to get into an argument with a mud monster, know that he's a mud monster. Mm-hmm. You're never going to convince that guy. Mm-hmm. You can shake papers. You can don't know who you're arguing with and make sure that it's a valuable one. That there's going to be some benefit from the outcome. The other is okay. Let him have his way. You know, just let him have his way. I say that with some apprehension in that people who say, I don't have any interest in politics. Well, let me tell you, politics has an interest in you.
Yeah, you've said that to me several times.
Yeah. The people who say, well, that's none of my business. I don't care how it is. They care because when you don't care, that's a vote. That's a vote for something. Mm-hmm. And to coin a phrase of a motto from a school district where I used to sit on the board, what we permit, we condone, right? So me having this neutral or silent thing is actually another way of saying, okay, it's okay if you do that. Really? Is it really okay? Because now it's okay to eat your pets. And that's not okay. That's not okay.
It's all a balance.
You let it all slipped out because you didn't want to participate. But, you know, all I think my big takeaway on this thing is find a way to speak to people. Find a way to have some compassion and speak to people and just know that don't win every argument. Don't try.
Right.
Try to learn things.
Know to withdraw and that you withdraw on your terms.
But it is interesting that the people that you can have some, I've made some great conflicts literally from people I got in fights with. They're still my friends to this day. Mm-hmm. And you just find out that you're both strong. You're both right.
Mm-hmm.
You just are missing the finer argument to who gets credit for it, right?
Right.
Yeah. This is a good topic. We can talk forever for stuff like this, but We'll find another time.
We will. So kind of just wrap that up real quick.
Yeah, thanks.
We have on the 26th of next week.
Dr. Jordan Peterson.
Yes. Live and in person. I'm very... Those who wrestle with God?
Yep. Those of us that wrestle with God. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, 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 very interested in that.
Yeah.
And...
We get to do a little meet and greet.
Yes, we do. Very exciting. And
yeah. This will be a big thing for me. I've followed Jordan Peterson long before 2016 when he was thrust into the light. But
yeah.
I have very strong opinions of Dr. Peterson. I've seen the way that he does things evolve. I've seen some things, and now I see that politics has played a heavy role in Dr. Peterson's life.
Oh, yes, it has.
And this is a minefield that he's been just immersed in, and it's all because of social awareness, social justice. So I'm not sure what it is, but
yeah, I'm sure he's not sure what it is.
He doesn't either.
But yeah, so we will actually do an episode over that. We're going to just kind of talk about what we observed there and what our takeaways were. So we'll be doing
we'll
an episode.
We'll be people watching.
The gender ratio, I'm very curious about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's typically, I won't quote percentages, but it's always been a majority of men, 20 to 40.
Wow. I like him. So.
I do too. And
I'm a pretty good dude, though.
And I think I think it's going to be great. And
it'll be fun.
I'll be curious. We're going to dress up. This is a dress-up event.
Yeah.
And this will be kind of fun. We hope to snap a couple pics. I hope to deliver a letter to Dr. Peterson.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, as always.
Appreciate it, Liz. Thank you.
Yes.
As you always, guys, I want you to take care of yourselves. When I say take care of yourselves, I mean take care of yourself. Somebody else needs you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The mind's always just... in the same realm, always be compassionate. Don't forget about you. You're the one person that you always forget about.
Yeah,
so don't do that.
Yeah.
So remember to think about yourself, that you are not selfish. It is self-care. And always thanks for listening, and go in and do all the, you know, liking and sharing and all the stuff that you're supposed to be doing.
Yes,
on
please.
Media.
We're back. We're hope to get back on this bike, and I think this is the start.
Yeah, we've got
right
some really great things coming up this spring and this summer. We'll stay tuned for that. We'll be putting that on our website.
Yep.
A lot more involvement with Genuine Effort, which is super exciting.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so lots of fun things coming up. So stay tuned.
Yep. Thanks, Liz. Bye, guys.